which states, and I will be quoting from the rule, section 1, the speaker must refer every NCOP matter referred from the NCOP on which the delegation of the province will be expected to vote in the NCOP for recommendation and report A to the appropriate standing committee, or B, if the speaker is of the opinion that the nature of the matter still requires an ad hoc committee, subsection 2, after referring a matter to a committee in terms of subrule 1, the speaker must table the matter at the earliest opportunity. Subsection 3, the committee to which a matter has been referred in terms of subrule 1 must, A, where appropriate, confer authority on the province's delegation to the NCOP of the parameters for negotiating when the matter is considered by a committee of the NCOP, B, in respect of an NCOP matter not mentioned in the Mandating Procedures Act, confer authority on the provincial delegation to respect of an NCOP matter mentioned in the Mandating Procedures Act in its report, recommend to the House the authority to be conferred by the House in terms of the Mandating Procedures Act and the provincial delegation to cast votes in proceedings of the NCOP or relevant NCOP committee. Subsection 4, when a committee considers a matter referred to it in terms of this rule, the committee must inform the relevant member of the provincial cabinet and give that member of the provincial cabinet the opportunity to present the views of the provincial cabinet on the matter to the committee. I have thus quote the rule as received. I've quote the ATC number as received at 25 minutes past 10. Colleagues, I've indicated to you previously that I will ask that the legal advisor also just joins us for questions in this regard. But colleagues, I just want to firstly say thank you for your support and your patience. For me, what is very, very important is that we cannot in the budget committee create a precedence that is going to affect every other single committee in the Western Cape Provincial Parliament when it comes to Section 76 legislation. I also had a quick look at the constitution that relates to the powers of provincial parliament in section 23 of our provincial constitution, subsection 3, dealing with the provincial parliament, A, determine and control its own internal arrangements, procedures, proceedings and procedures, and B, make rules and orders concerning its business with due regard to representative and participatory democracy, accountability, transparency, and public participation. I took the liberty to peruse quickly the NCOP rule booklet, and while it is not authority upon us, it is of persuasive value. And when you read the referral from the NA to the NCOP on Section 75, Section 76, Section 74 legislation, as well as the other way around, when you deal with Section 76, Subsection 72 legislation, it all deals with the word referral. And while those are not of authority upon us, it is of persuasive value. But luckily for us, we do have a specific rule in the Western Cape Provincial Parliament, read in line with our powers of our provincial parliament in terms of Section 23 of our provincial constitution, that tell us what we must and must not do. I'm going to now formally thus ask everyone just to introduce themselves, and then I'm going to ask Advocate Leroux just to outline respective procedures when it comes to referral. I've also in the meantime asked the speaker that even though the referral has now come to us before 11 o'clock, that it would be good for chairpersons to receive perhaps even a memo on that matters must be referred. Because if matters are not referred to us, then what stops me today from talking and discussing and considering the provincial budget, which is only going to be tabled next week, Tuesday. That is just an example, but if members can just please introduce themselves, and then I'll allow the officials to introduce themselves, and then I'm going to first hand over to Advocate Leroux, when we will then jump straight into the presentation, followed by the public hearing, and it is my understanding that Commissioner Nomdu is online for the session on the public hearing. So those who would wish to make comments are also then present on the meeting. With that, colleagues, please introduce yourselves.
Good afternoon, Chair. Kayla Murray.
Morning.
Good morning, Chairperson. Derek America.
Morning.
Morning, Chairperson, and morning to the members of the committee as well as members of the public. My name is Lulama Mvimbi,
Morning, member. Okay, if that is all, morning.
Chairperson, can you hear me?
I can hear you, member.
Yes, good morning, Chair and members. It's member Mesuli Kama.
Welcome, member Kama. We are always very happy when there are additional and extra people attending Budget Committee. We are on a mission to make finance fun again. With that, I'm going to hand over to the official from National Treasury first.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members and the colleagues. My name is Merima Jake from the National Treasury within the Intergovernmental Relations Unit. We are responsible for the monitoring of the provincial budget implementation. I'll ask my two colleagues to introduce themselves. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you so much.
Good morning, honorable members and colleagues. My name is Kodisang Mudivanele from National Treasury and the Intergovernmental Relations Branch, working with intergovernmental policy and planning. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Welcome back.
Good morning, Chair. Oh, sorry.
Sorry.
Good morning, Chair. Continue.
Good morning, Chair. Thank you very much. Good morning, Chair. Good morning to all the colleagues. Khalil Brankais, member of the Budget Committee.
Thank you so much. I think it's Mr. Ngobeni still.
Thanks, and good morning, Chair and honorable members. My name is Marvin Ngobeni, also from National Treasury's Intergovernmental Relations, but responsible for municipal grants. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And officials, we are joined today by Ms. Kamish Ahmed, Ms. Bela, Mr. Vermeulen, and Advocate Leroux. Colleagues, I've already dealt with the respective introduction and the ATC number as well as the rule, but I'm going to hand over now to Advocate Leroux just to assist you as he is asked to just assist us in Budget Committee because I'm not the legal advisor to the committee. Thank you. Advocate Leroux.
Good morning, Chairperson. Chairperson, would you like me to comment on the issue of the referral specifically?
So we have received referral now, and therefore we will continue. But the members obviously asked that we can please get advice on why this referral must come. I have quoted the full 217 rule into the record. I'm not sure if there's anything specific extra you would like to say, or if you would like to explain the nature of a referral to members. But members did ask that I just ask for the legal to assist us in this regard. And I think what is important is if this happens in the future, why we need the referral.
Chairperson, thank you for that. Chairperson, I think you were very comprehensive in your comments you made earlier. You referred to Rule 217 of the Standing Rules of the Western Cape, which imposes an obligation on the Speaker to refer all NCRP matters that require a vote to the committee. It's my understanding quite simply that there wasn't a referral by the time the committee met earlier and that there is now a referral that complies with Rule 217. Chair, except for that, I don't have anything to add unless there are specific questions. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. I'm going to ask if there are any questions now, but I do think as a committee we must ask the Speaker in general to perhaps also just do a memo, either from the legal side of some sort, just to remind committees that on Section 76 legislation, these are the rules that are applicable to us. Member Mvimbi?
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you very much for the explanation and clarity you have given, as well as the one that is given by Advocate Leroux. I think the one basic question which I was also interested to hear an answer on, which was asked by Honorable Nkondlo, was around the status of the meeting, whether can a meeting continue or not continue if there is no such referral letter in future. Bearing in mind that the issue of the referral letter is just an administrative measure for maybe for record purposes, but also will the absence of a referral letter affect the status of the meeting? Because this morning, as you are aware, we could not continue because there was no referral letter. If the meeting will have continued, was the status of the committee going to be affected? Because there was also an advice that we were given, or kind of an opinion, I will say, that maybe the meeting will have continued, but then when it comes to taking a decision, we will not be able to take a decision because of the status of the meeting. So it will be good for future purposes, Honor Advocate, that we know whether can this referral letter stifle a continuation of the meeting or not.
Thank you, Member Mzimbi. When I read section 217, subsection 1, subsection A, as well as B, it does not refer to budget committee, it refers to the appropriate standing committee. And my personal reading of it would be that the speaker must first then decide which committee a bill goes to. That is then followed by the ATC as referred to in subsection 2 of rule 217, and that is then followed by rule subsection 3 of rule 217, which then says, okay, now the committee has these powers of what it's supposed to do. Advocate LaRue, I'm not sure if I'm putting that in too much of a layman or simplistic terminology, but if you could perhaps assist us as well as particularly Member Mvimbi as to how that would affect status of the briefings and so on, especially since the first sentence of the rule says the speaker must refer every NCOP matter referred from the NCOP and on which the delegation of the province will be expected to vote in the NCOP for recommendation and report. Thank you.
Chairperson, yes, thank you for that question. Of course, the rules are there for a purpose, and one should not, without good reason, not adhere to the rules. And I think the concern this morning was that there has not been compliance with Rule 217. I think from a legal perspective, I would say, relying on the what's known as the Uriani Ambrosini judgment, that the principle is that the House is master of its process. So I think technically it would have been possible for any committee report referred to the House for the House to remedy any sort of procedural deficiency that there might have been. That having been said, I also think there's a policy space, and that's not my area to speak in, from a policy perspective, whether it is advisable for committees to proceed unless there has been compliance with Rule 217 in particular, and to create a precedent around that. Chairperson, maybe if the members so desire, legal support can take some time and just prepare maybe a short advice on the issue, then it's on the record for future reference.
I think as a clue, we really would appreciate that, because while the matter is moot now, it might come up in the future. But I thank you for being available on such short notice and being able to assist us in this regard. Member Mvimbi, are you happy with that particular approach and the information?
Thank you very much, Chepis. Yeah.
Thank you so much. Member Mvimbi, I would never want to put yourself, myself, or the committee at open to any possible legal challenges. So we just make sure that our T's are crossed and our I's are dotted. But with that, I just want to check, Ms. Macheke, are you ready to jump straight into the presentation? The presentation has been sent to everyone. And I do know that out of the 22 slides, only about 3 relates to the Western Cape impact specifically. So I don't think it's too long of a presentation.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. Yes, we are ready. So I will share the presentation with Godisang. I will do the first part, Chairperson, if I can be allowed to share.
Yes, you may. You can just press the little white button in the corner.
I have. Is it visible for everyone?
It is, thank you. You might just want to make it either a little bit bigger or in presentation mode. Thank you.
I have it in Acrobat. And now?
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you so much, Chairperson and the honorable members. The presentation is not that long, as the Chairperson has already alluded. I will do the first, I think, 11 slides, and Kodisang will do the rest, starting from the local government changes. So, I don't know, this is going to give me a problem now because it's too big. Okay. Apologies for that delay. So the outline, we're going to look into the overview of 2023 Division of Revenue Amendment Bill, changes to the schedules, changes to provincial allocation, and changes to local government allocations, as well as the annex today that gives more details into the bill. Thank you. So in terms of Chairperson, is it still visible enough for people to read?
It is. We have also forwarded to everyone, but it is visible. Thank you.
Okay. So here is the proposed amendments. Chairperson and honorable members and the members of the public will remember that in February, the Division of Revenue Bill was tabled in Parliament, and it was assented into Act and signed by the President in June 2023. So we have now the Division of Revenue Act as well as the Gazette. So the Act contains clauses of the Act set requirements for transfer of funds, reporting of funds, conditions that may be set for grants and enforcement mechanisms. It also contains schedules to the Act, the equitable share, and the grant allocations. That will be the conditional grant allocations. We make specific indication to 215-page Gazette by signed by the Minister, whereby it's setting out the conditions and responsibilities attached to each conditional grant, allocations per individual municipality, supplementary details for allocations, for instance, the split per grant component, and the Division of Revenue Amendment Bill was tabled in this month, the first of this month, which contains the in-year adjustment to allocations consistent with the limitation in terms of Section 30 of the PFMA. It can also request to correct a gazetted framework, as was gazetted in June. So this adjustment, when you look on our right-hand side, there we're just explaining that the Section 30 of the PFMA says that the national adjustment budget may only provide for A, adjustments required due to significant and unforeseeable economic and financial events affecting the fiscal targets set by the annual budget. The second one being unforeseeable and unavoidable expenditure recommended by the national executive or any committee of cabinet member to whom this task has been assigned. It also looks into any expenditure in terms of Section 16, money or to be appropriated for expenditure already announced by the Minister during the tabling of the annual budget. The shifting of funds between and within votes, or to follow the transfer of fashion in terms of Section 42 of the PFMA. It also looks into the utilization of savings under a main division of a vote for the defrayment of excess expenditure under main division of the same vote in terms of Section 43. Okay. And then I just want to finish this first part. Make it smaller a little bit. It also looks into the rollover of the unspent funds from the preceding financial year. Okay. And members will be bear with me. I'm going to go a little bit slower because it's a the page is bigger. Okay. So here we are dealing with the changes in the schedule. So in February, when the budget was tabled, we had what we can see in red column A. So the main purpose of amendment bill is to amend column A of the DORA, which shows the allocation for the current year 2023-24. The column shows the original allocation. Now when we split it, it will show the original allocation adjustment and the new adjusted allocation. Column A is amended for schedules 1, 2, 3, and 4, and Part A and B, and Part 6, and A and B, and Part 7. So when we look on our right, honorable members and the chairperson, column A has been split from it having now three columns. We're having the main allocation for the three spheres of government, the national, the provincial, and the local, where we had a budget of 2 trillion. And then now in November, it has been adjusted. We are having an addition of 13 billion, and the adjustment is being, adjusted allocation has been going up to 2.48 trillion. So honorable members will take note there that the increase is within the provincial sphere, which is going up by 17 billion. Okay. So now I'm going to take you through the changes in provincial allocation. So the increase that I have just spoken into the provincial allocation speaks to the allocation additions made for health and education to compensate the wage implications. So these are done in the provincial equitable share allocation. So the additions are based on the headcount per province in health and education. So it was done accordingly so that these critical sectors, there isn't a shortage in terms of paying the officials, the specialists, and everybody who's delivering the services. Okay. Again, we also have the reprioritization and rollovers, whereby 57 million is reprioritized from school infrastructure backlog grant to the vote of the National Department of Basic Education, of which 32 million will fund compensation of employees' pressure as stated, and 25 million will fund information and communication technology upgrades, which the Department of Basic Education wants to venture into. And we also have a rollover of 137 million, which is the school infrastructure backlog grant, of which 93 million of is for completion of projects in the sanitation appropriate for education initiatives of schools, 26 million for the completion of projects of accelerated school infrastructure delivery initiatives, and 18 is for is associated with the management cost. The funds are for the schools in the Eastern Cape, KwaZulu-Natal, and Limpopo. As much as there was an increase in the provincial equitable share, we have reductions in the conditional grants, which I'm going to quickly take you through. So we are saying only conditional grants were reduced in year, and equitable share was not. So the school infrastructure backlog grant reduced includes the reprioritization of the 57 million, which I have already alluded into in the last slide. So that amount we can see it was an indirect grant. So it has been operated by Basic Education on behalf of the provinces. So those are the amounts that we see at the bottom of the column where we see the amounts. But again, for the direct transfers or direct conditional trusts that are being run and managed by the provinces, we see that there is a reduction in all of them. Agriculture, basic education taking a bigger share, as well as the human settlement are also taking reductions. And the reductions were besides that we are addressing the challenges that we have with the economy and the collection that was not appropriate. It was also based on the spending on these conditional grants. And I just want to also mention that when we look into the education, the National School Nutrition Program has been protected from the reductions, as we know that it directly hit to the poor and the kids at school who cannot afford to go to school and not have food. If I can continue. So changes to KZN frameworks and allocation, Section 15, subsection 4 of the Division of Revenue Act 2023 requires National Treasury to consult Parliament on any proposed changes to a conditional grant framework for the purpose of correcting an error or omission. So in this case, the changes to allocation, so we have here the expanded public works program, integrated grant for provinces, and allocation of 3 million and 4 million that were previously allocated to the former Western Cape Departments of Human Settlement, and as well as Transport and Public Works Department, which were separate, have now been combined into a single allocation for the new department that we have in the Western Cape Department of Infrastructure. So that is the change that we are tabling. Now, when we look specifically into the Western Cape provincial allocations, looking at the adjustment that have been done in here, again, I have already mentioned that there is an increase in terms of the equitable share to cater for the health and education wage increase. And we have the 642 million that has been the reductions for the conditional grants. As mentioned, all the grants are affected, except that for education, as I have said, National School Nutrition Program, as well as learners with profound disability, grants have not been touched. They haven't been reduced at all. We also have some few grants in health that are also not being reduced. The grants that have really been reduced or taken a big Hiding was the one that deals with the infrastructure, because it takes time to plan for infrastructure, so it could be possible to take the money there for now. But those which are having a bigger impact, the impact can be felt immediately if they are being reduced, have been spared from the reduction. So now we have the adjusted appropriation for the province of the Western Cape at 74 billion, which the mean was 73. The next slide is still giving the details and amount per grant as it relates to the Western Cape. I will then hand over to Kodisang, chairperson, with your permission to go through the changes to local government. I will still flight the presentation for him so that we can go quicker. Thank you. Kodisang.
Thank you very much, Mary, and good morning once again to the honourable members. So I'll be taking you through the changes or the adjustments to the local government fiscal framework. The first adjustment that we made was the declaration of under-expenditure towards the local government equitable share at the beginning of the year. Through the equitable share, we had made provision for the fee basic subsidy as it relates to electricity to increase by 20.87%. So we had made that amendment and provision for municipalities through the equitable share allocations. However, given the process NERSA undertakes to revise the tariff increases, we had made an extra provision of 1.4 billion rand just in case if the provision that we already had for the 20.87% was not enough. But in June of this year, NERSA had declared that they'll only be increasing by 15.1%. Which meant that municipalities through the allocations from the local government equitable share were adequately provided for in the free basic subsidy component of the equitable share. So there was no need to allocate the 1.4 billion again to municipalities. So the 1.4 billion was unallocated. In Schedule 3 of the Division of Revenue Act, you'll see that the 1.4 billion was scheduled as being unallocated. So now we declare it as under expenditure because the tariff increase came below what we had expected. The second adjustment was for additions. This is 1.2 billion rand for the municipal disaster recovery grant for province for infrastructure damaged due to floods between February and March 2023. This is for KwaZulu-Natal, Mpumalanga, and Eastern, and those kinds of programs in Limpopo. The second addition was the 372 million, which was added to the municipal disaster response grant. And this is just to replenish the depleted grant baseline so that municipalities that have been affected by disasters can still continue rehabilitating the infrastructure and things of that nature. The third set of adjustments was related to conversions, and this is primarily direct allocations being converted to indirect allocations so that the national department can implement some of the projects on behalf of the municipality. And these are for municipalities that are basically struggling to implement those projects, so the national department will implement on their behalf. The first is 10 million rand for the Otugela local municipality through the municipal infrastructure grant. And it's been converted to an indirect allocation for the water supply project, Ekuvugeni water supply project. Sorry about that. The second one is a 20 million rand conversion for Imfuleni local municipality, also through the municipal infrastructure grant, which has been converted to an indirect allocation to address the outfall of sewer in the Everton and Sebokeng areas. The third conversion was 88 million rand from the direct component of the Neighborhood Development Partnership Grant, and it's shifted to the indirect component to expedite the project implementation in the municipalities that are experiencing administrative and financial challenges. Next slide, please.
And the last set of adjustments were reprioritizations. This is the first one is from the Integrated National Electrification Program, the ESCOM grant of 53 million rand. It has been shifted, reprioritized from the vote to the National Department of Mineral Resources and Energy to fund the rehabilitation and derelict of ownership of mines. The next set of reprioritizations is the 309 million that has been reprioritized from the indirect component of the regional bulk infrastructure grant to the indirect component of the water services infrastructure grants to enable the Department of Water and Sanitation to manage their contractual obligations and budget pressures. And as my colleague Mary had said earlier, you know, in taking consideration of these reductions and reprioritizations, we do take into consideration the state of implementation and readiness, service delivery performance, and performance of spending when we do make these kinds of adjustments. So in essence, this is the fiscal consolidation reductions. Similar to the provincial side, there are no reductions to the local government equitable share, and direct components or direct conditional grants have been reduced by 3.4 billion, with the biggest reduction being from the public transport network grant. And we also have a reduction of 250 million from the Integrated National Electrification Program, the ESCOM grant, by 250 million. And this includes the reprioritization that I had mentioned earlier. Next slide, please. So we do have changes to gazetted frameworks and allocations from the local government side. The first point just lays the legislative prescript that allows for this and what we the process that we should undertake, which my colleague Mary had gone through earlier, so I won't go through that. So with regards to grant framework changes, a new condition was added below for the Municipal Disaster Recovery Grant, given that the grant was given 1.2 billion rand in year. And the condition that was stated is to ring fence the money, the 1.2 billion rand, to ring fence the money for the reconstruction and rehabilitation of municipal infrastructure damaged by the floods. And this is to ensure that the money that has been allocated goes to the projects that have been identified. We do have changes to allocations. The first change is to the indirect regional bulk infrastructure grant, where an amount of 20 million rand for the Kirkwood Water Project was allocated. An error was done there in the allocation to the Dr. Bayes Nodea local municipality. And this has been corrected as it is an allocation to the Sunday River local municipality. So that's a shift from the Bayes Nodea local municipality to the Sunday River local municipality. Next slide, please. So in essence, what do these adjustments mean for the Western Cape or municipalities within the Western Cape? So as you can see there, the majority of the reductions are towards the infrastructure grants, as they do make up the bulk of the local government conditional grants, and very little from the indirect transfers and the capacity building transfers to local government. So all in all, the reductions are about 211 million rand, which is less than about 10% of the total reductions that are in the system. And that shifts the total allocations for Western Cape from 5.9 billion rand to about 5.7 billion rand that is due for municipalities within the Western Cape provincial government. And I think this is my last slide, if I'm not mistaken. Yes, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much, Chairperson. That's where we end our presentation. Thank you to the honourable members.
Thank you to the National Treasury on this roll for the presentation. Colleagues, I'm going to take questions now, but what I'm going to do is, in order to allow for sufficient time for the members of the public as well, I'm going to limit members' questions first to three questions. please just a reminder, this is a presentation based on the bill. The bill is 99 pages long, so you are welcome to ask on any one of those 99 pages of the bill. Thank you. I see Member Mzimbi's hand. I'm just going to take names here quickly first. Okay, if Member Mzimbi is the only one, then I'll go after Member Mzimbi. Member Mzimbi, you have three questions, and depending on how much time we have left, then I will go over to public participation. And then Member America. Okay, perfect. In that order, thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you very much to the National Treasurer for the presentation, very comprehensive presentation. I welcome it and appreciate it. Just my three question, Honorable Chairperson, will just a point of clarity so that I can further understand. I might have maybe not understand some of the issues. For example, I think the way I understood it is that the Western Cape its budget has been increased from 73 billion to 74 billion. So that means there has been a billion that we have that has been reallocated to the Western Cape. I would just like to have a, is that my understanding of it? And also the other one is based on the under expenditure to local government on equitable shared. It's something to do with electricity, but I think the presenter was a bit fast for me. I was trying to listen attentively as to, as it is for, is referred to electricity, what must actually, is it based on the tariff that the municipality must set on? So if maybe the presenter can just elaborate more for me on that. And the last one will be the 88 million on a neighborhood development grant. Are there any Western Cape municipalities that will be benefiting on this neighborhood development grant? If there is, I might have not actually picked that up. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you so much. Just for the procedural officer, Member Mzimbi's first question relates to page 4 of the bill. Member Mzimbi's second question relating to electricity relates to page 34 of the bill. And for some reason, I can't find my section on neighborhood grants, but the presenter can assist us just with the page number there, just so that we have it for our records in terms of the legislation questions. Thank you. Member America?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I want to remind the meeting about when we dealt with the main budget earlier this year. The anticipated allocation or anticipated public sector wage increase was factored in the appropriation during the main in the main budget, and that was 3%. And when we presented that to the various departments and the provincial treasury, we were made to believe that because at that stage it has already been sort of in the public domain that national government has settled with the public sector unions, that a 7.5% increase would be given. Provincial Treasury at that stage indicated to us that although they have budgeted 3%, the shortfall would invariably be carried by national government. Now, we are presented now with adjusted allocation of 1.7 billion rand increase to compensate for employees' salary increases. And it stated that it is only in relation to education and health services. And we know that cumulatively, the cost of the that all the departments have to bear is way above 1.7 million rand. And somewhere along the line, that shortfall has to come from somewhere. And unfortunately, services that could be delivered will have to be sacrificed in terms of making up for the shortfall and to compensate for the wage increases, which was centrally negotiated and settled without the provincial government's input. I would like to know the comment and what is the reason why only limiting the additional allocation only to health and education. And then secondly, Chairperson, major concern that we have, we know in Gauteng and the Western Cape in KwaZulu-Natal, the migration of people from other provinces. And in the Western Cape, our population has increased significantly over the years. And that is borne out by the census that was just concluded this year. Now, the reduction in the infrastructure grant is a major concern, Chairperson, in a sense, because these cuts would then prevent us from building additional schools to cater for the increased demand for schools and for clinics, etc. Now, additionally to that also, we find that maintenance of our road infrastructure will become under pressure because of these cuts. We know that for effective service delivery, we need these kind of infrastructure to be maintained, schools to be built, clinics to be built and to be maintained, etc., to cater for the demand that's out there. And we're going to have big problems, Chairperson, because we have insufficient schools. The pressure is too great to accommodate school children. And what do we, as the government, tell parents who are taxpayers, who are citizens of this country, that we don't have the money to build a school to accommodate children? So I'm concerned about the Chairperson, and I'd like to know Treasury's response to that, because certainly we're creating conditions for social instability. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you so much. Regarding Member Medica's first question, that was on page 33, I see, of the bill, as well as page 4, which deals with Schedule 2. Member Medica's second question that dealt with the census matter relates to the long title of the bill, relates to Section 214 of the Constitution, as well as page 28 in the bill, dealing with the memorandum in terms of the constitutional implications. And then I found the reference for Member Mvimbi's last one, which was on page 35, dealing with the neighborhood grant matters. Member Klaas, you are next. Member Klaas, you need to unmute.
Yes, I did unmute. Thank you. I was looking for this place of unmute. Chair, thank you for the opportunity to come and speak, but mine, it won't be long. But I don't know, you can scroll me back when the starting of the presentation. I want just to highlight something. There's a question there, if they can scroll back for when they are starting the presentation.
Do you want them to go to the page 1, page 2? What topic was it on?
Yeah, it was where they were discussing about 1.4 million that was given, but the reason, then that 1.4 million has not been used. And then after
So to the National Treasury, Ms. Macheke, Member class is referring to the declared undisputed reserve for government equitable share relating to the NERSA amount for electricity. And just for the procedural officer, that's also on page 34 of the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, that 1.4 billion unallocated. The reason they said to us that is because the money that was given to them has not been more expended. Was not more expended. Yes, I want that name. Now my question is that if it's not more expended, what was left, and why is not shown that, or why we don't tell us that what was left, and then it saves so much? Because I think that the local government needs a lot to be helped, because most of the time in the local government we hear always there's problems even of electricity is expensive and all that stuff. Why they don't invest in other people to pay grand people, old people? Why they don't invest for them to not to pay lesser? Thank you.
No problem, Member Klaas. I just want to check if those, that's your only question, because then I'm going to pose my questions. And then after that, I'm going to ask the members of the public to join us in asking questions. Member Klaas? Okay, so I'm going to assume quiet means you're forfeiting your other two questions for now. Okay.
Sorry. That's why it was one question for me.
No problem. Thank you so much. Okay. Colleagues from National Treasury, Ms. Macheka and team, for me, what is very concerning is the National Public Wage Sector Agreement that national government made, the impact thereof on the Western Cape government across departments is 2.9 billion rand. The equitable share increase on page 4 that deals with this, as well as page 33 in the bill dealing with Schedule 2, says that you're increasing our equitable share by 1.7 billion rand in order to deal with the public wage agreement in the health and the education sectors. Now, when you take 2.9 billion rand and you minus 1.7 billion rand, that means National Treasury owes the Western Cape government 1.2 billion rand for an agreement the National Treasury made. So while on paper, the budget shows an increase of 1.7 billion rand in the DORA, what you are not telling people is that the Minister of Finance in the province must now go find 1.2 billion rand in the provincial budget to essentially cut. Because where is the provincial minister of finance going to find 1.2 billion rand in order to plus buy the 1.7 billion rand to get to the 2.9 billion rand for the public wage agreement that National Treasury made? And this is not just the Western Cape. This is every province. All provinces are being short, is being shorted at the moment in terms of public wages. Essentially, what you're saying to us is, we can only cover 78% of our public wage agreement, and that is going to be in the education and health sectors, and you are now on your own with the rest. So I would like to know which provincial department budget in the Western Cape would you like the Western Cape to cut in order to make provision for the 1.2 billion rand that National Treasury is not giving us? That is my first question. My second question, and I'm going to refer both to sections 28 and sections 29 of the Constitution. Section 28 of the Constitution deals with the right of children, and I'm going to specifically focus on subsection 2, a child's best interests are of paramount importance in every matter concerning the child. And I'm also going to refer to section 29 dealing with education. Everyone has the right to a basic education, including adult basic education, and then it goes further regarding higher and further education. Now, education is an immediately realizable right. Okay, now let me get back to the budget. On education, you are cutting the conditional grant of education infrastructure in the Western Cape by 156.875 million rand, despite education being an immediately realizable right. You are also cutting the early childhood development grant, and that is by 14 million rand. In the education component, you're also cutting the HIV and AIDS life skills education grant by 3 million rand, and you're cutting the math, science and technology grant by 4.2 million rand. If I don't even get to the other infrastructure grants, the total reduction in conditional grants is 642 million, and that is majority on infrastructure across departments, and that does not take into account the 1.2 billion rand that you as National Treasury have now decided to not give us. So when we are not able to then build schools, if we are not able to assist with early childhood development, and people come and they say, we're going to sue all of the provinces for not ensuring that education is an immediately realizable right, is National Treasury going to foot the legal bill? Then finally, in terms of the census data, and in this regard, I refer to the provincial equitable share formula. And at the previously, the Western Cape was the fifth largest province in terms of population. And we all know the population statistics make up the majority of the formula's data sets, which means that when your population increases or decreases, it substantially changes the amount of provincial equitable share we get from national government. But now the question is, we are now the third largest province after the census data, but there's still no indication when this data sets will be incorporated. There have been talks that it might be incorporated by June, July in 2024 for implementation towards the 2025 year, but that is way too late because the pressures and the expenditure is already happening. The pressures and expenditures are already occurring, so we cannot wait that long. We need to expedite the incorporation of the increase of population data and its data sets for the February main budget, because currently the money is not following the feet. Thank you. Those are my three questions. Let me just see here quickly. Ms. Nomdu? Are you online? Are you with us?
Good afternoon. Yes, Chair, afternoon. We are here.
Wonderful. Ms. Nomdu, I'm going to ask that you present your submission now, plus any questions you and your children monitors may have now, so that National Treasury is able to respond to us all in collective. And I'm doing so today because obviously of our time constraint in consideration of the fact that we started late. And then what I'll do is I'll open up for follow-up questions afterwards.
Good afternoon, Chair and honorable members. Thank you for this opportunity to address you. I'm actually going to put on the video so that you can see that I'm joined by V from the Child Government Monitors. I just want an indication from the chair, how many minutes do we have to present so we keep our eye on the time as well. I think members are also worried about the other commitments. So if you give us the time, then we can plan accordingly.
Okay, you may share your presentation. It has been also forwarded to members. And Ms. Nombo, I'm going to give you 15 minutes. And I'm giving you 15 minutes because you deserve at least 15 minutes, at the very least. And that is that's without your questions. Because it is not your fault that the letter of referral did not reach the budget committee in time. It is not your fault or the children's monitor's fault. And in terms of public hearings and public input, we take public participation very seriously. If we require more time, we will look at it after the 15 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm keeping my eye on that 15 minutes right now. For those who may not know me, I'm Christina Nomdu, the Western Cape Commissioner for Children, a creature of statute created by the Western Cape Provincial Parliament. We started off on the 1st of June 2020, and you will know that a character of my term has been that little voices must count. So I've worked in full partnership with children from the inception of my office, and you know my mandate says that I'm concerned with law, policy, and practice reform. And I'm happy to inform the committee and parliament that children have been partners in those processes of law, policy, and practice reform. With special reference to budget, policy, and law, you know, in 2021, I think the children listened to the medium-term budget policy speech of the national minister, and they were confounded. They didn't know what was going on. They were speaking a foreign language, technical terms they could not understand. And so we endeavored as the office to include them in budget processes by teaching them the budget language, by teaching them how government works. I say teaching, but in actual fact, all we do is have fun and play games. I think Vimbai will tell you shortly how we impart knowledge across the generations. I learn from them, I think, more than they learn from me. So we have this year decided that we are fully on board with the budget process. The child government monitors and I, 17 of them, convened in a WhatsApp chat group. You will know that I have WhatsApp chat groups with them every Wednesday. We talk about weighty issues like the lived reality of children in our province, the issues that they want to bring to the commissioner, the issues that they want the commissioner to act upon. And so they gave us a clear mandate that we needed to communicate to the Minister of Finance and the National Treasury in relation to the MTBPS. And it's that presentation that I shared beforehand earlier this week. But first, I'm going to give the opportunity to Vimbai to just tell you the story of how she has experienced working with the commissioner on budget matters. I hand over to Vimbai.
Good afternoon, honorable members of parliament and the chair. I'm Vimbai. I'm 17 years old and I'm a child government manager and advisor in the office. The commissioner helps to promote and protect the rights of the children in the Western Cape province as stated in a mandate. She does this by directly working with children, and I am here as that evidence. She has taken it upon herself to educate and equip children on the big and understandable government budget books. She has done this through workshops, but we call it camps. And I've had the privilege of being a part of this since July 2020. The first ever budget workshop was the provincial budget workshops, whereby the commissioner explained to us the horizontal and vertical cuts of the dollar. She did this through a cake. She cut the cake vertically, explaining how money is shared between national, local, to educate us on how money within a province is then shared after all expenses are done. We did get to eat the cake afterwards. We also had a camp the same year in October on budget advocacy, when she explained to us all the big terms like medium-term budget policy brief and others, which are sometimes running out of my mind because they're too big to keep. But I was educated and my grammar did enhance. Thank you so much to that, Christina. And then this year, the most recent one was in July 2023, when we did the local government budget training and the IDPs of three different communities, which was Matsikama, Bitter, and Cape Town. We learned on how to read the local government budget book, how money is shared in the local government, and how the IDPs explain and how they educate everyone. But we did kind of realize that in the medium-term budget policy brief, nothing as a child was mentioned. No words, nothing connected to a child was mentioned in the medium-term budget policy brief. Even being vaguely mentioned, they were not talked about. And then in the Division of Revenue Amendment Bill, I saw the word child more than 100 times. Children were mentioned like 66 times, and I was so excited until I actually read in more depth, and saw that it was only in the context of cutting everything that affects children. The educational infrastructure grants, the health grants, the nutrition grants, everything concerning children was being cut. Which made me wonder, do the big ladies and men in suits think of the little voices when they're making decisions at the big tables? Thank you.
Thank you. I had to plug in the computer. It has run out. So thank you, V. I think when we consider the durable, I want us to also be developmental with our office as we are with the members. For us, we were quite confident in our presentation that we've made towards the MTBPS. And I'm just going to share the presentation that I have for this committee. So that you can see some of the messages that we shared on the MTBPS forum. I know that it's not appropriate for you and that you can do nothing about it at this time, but I do want you to walk this journey with us. Can I just hear whether you can see our presentation?
We can see your presentation, and please do not apologize. It is also the Budget Committee's duty to make sure that in terms of Section 214, things like debt and the fiscus is looked at and how particular monies is impacting upon the province, and particularly Section 28 of the Constitution dealing with children, as well as the other related basic right constitutional sections. So please do not apologize for being passionate of wanting to give us your public input. Please continue.
Thank you. So I think the main points that we made with the legislature on national level and the National Treasury was that the children still found that the budget process and in general, the governance system in South Africa is not child-centered. We do not put children at the center of planning. This is a very big problem for me because it means we are not outcomes in, orientated, we're not futures orientated, and we are not rights orientated. Because if children were at the center of our society, we would then have this viewpoint that would look way into the future and not just be short term. It's definitely not child friendly, as V has pointed out. You know, budget, medium-term budget policy briefs become statements and so forth and so on. But, you know, it's big for them to be able to learn these words. And we thank members of this committee, the DG of the province at that time, the acting premier, and members of our provincial treasury for coming on board with us since July 2022 to build the capacity of children to understand these technical terms and to make it part of their, you know, their advocacy that they can now speak in governance language. We consider also that the debt burden on children is very great. Unfortunately, this passes from generation to generation. And we are very worried about the debt that our children are inheriting. We also ask very clearly that even though, you know, the National Treasury and, you know, the numbers may be a little bit inaccurate, but I think they said they need to raise 15 billion rand. And so I know that they're worried about which is they're going to raise taxes. Which cover this. The children appeal to me and I appeal to the National Parliament. Please do not raise the value added tax. This has detrimental effect on children directly because children, when they buy sweets, they pay tax. Or other necessities that they also buy in their families may be VAT exempt, but we know that it's only a small basket of goods that are VAT exempt. And so we believe that an increase in VAT will put an added burden on poor families and children. We appealed very much, and this is directly related to the division of revenue, public spending, health, education, child protection. Those are very important budgets that we need to, protect. And in our budgeting system, conditional grants are the ways to protect those budgets, because those monies are ring-fenced. They can only be used for those specific things. We were very distressed to see that amendments or adjustments are going to be made in year to conditional grants in the social sector. We would like to ask some questions in this regard. We also hear that the government is planning to reconfigure the state. And we read how they're planning to reconfigure the state. They look at economic efficiency of programs and maybe operational efficacy of programs. But as the chair has pointed out, we live in a rights context. We have a constitutional framework that makes children's rights a priority. And so we appeal to national government, national treasury, also as experts on human rights impact assessment tools. There is also a child rights impact assessment tool that is used to mitigate the effects of changes in law, policy, and practice on children. There you can see some of the quotes that the children have shared with us. And here are some of the children in practice. Here in the corner, you'll see them standing with a big national estimates of expenditure book. And they had a treasure hunt to read that book. They make posters and drawings, and that's the way they communicate with us. I interpret those drawings and those posters in order to articulate their advocacy messages to high decision makers like yourself. So a big call that we made to National Treasury was that they need to create a more child-friendly budget process and budget documents. And we are very happy that in that presentation, the National Treasury committed, and we see it as a commitment. They committed to apply themselves to create a child-centered and child-friendly budget system. I hope to see this coming soon. We'll give them some time, maybe until the February budget. But in the February budget, we would like to see some child-friendly tools coming through, some infographics, some cartoons, even some TikTok skits and Instagram reels, the children tell me. Is that right, V? Mm-hmm. I want to see some of that. For this discussion, we would like to understand from National Treasury how they are protecting the rights framework in our country, especially the immediately realizable rights for children. How they have considered when they do the vertical, horizontal split, the points that Chair has made about a member America has made about the in-migration of the population, and now the new statistics showing how the equitable share formula needs to be adjusted for the Western Cape. Because while that is not done, we will see services suffer for children. And we are very concerned about this. Like V mentioned, she was very excited to see the mention of children 105 times compared to 0 times in the medium budget policy statement. Unfortunately, it is in relation to cuts to conditional grants for children's services. And we would like an explanation of this. The children of this country, of this province, would like an explanation from Treasury about how it is possible for Treasury to abandon their obligation to fulfill children's rights. We would like them to consider immediately the impact that the cuts in these grants have brought about in children's lives. And I would like especially an explanation of the early childhood development grant under the fiscal consolidation reductions. It talks about 58 million from the early childhood development grant. The presenter from Treasury mentioned something in relation to 85 million. I think that is on page, I'm reading the fiscal consolidation. Three of the durable, you know, 58 million from early childhood development, 1.6 billion from education infrastructure, 28 million from life skills education, 15 from math grants, 1 billion reductions to the school infrastructure backlog grants are to the value of 260 million and a small constellation prioritize and go back into the education system. But I still don't understand the rationale. And take me through the meaning of the value, fiscal consolidation reduction of 58 million from the early childhood development grant. And on the it talks about 85 million rand lowers a reduction to the early childhood development grant. This manner of language is not accessible to myself as an adult, let alone to the children that I deal with. How will I explain it to them? May you please provide me with the tools to understand and explain these massive cuts in conditional grants for services, because for me, it means that we are not putting our children first. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Ms. Macheke, you can allocate the questions for your team accordingly, and then I will take follow-up questions from both the members and the members of the public together just for time constraints. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Chairperson, and thank you to the honorable members for the questions. I think one has just been enlightened by having the Commissioner for Children in the meeting. I'm learning a lot as you are going through your questions also. So we will divide the questions between ourselves. I will deal with the questions that deals with the province. And my colleagues, Mervin and Bodisang, will deal with the municipality or local government as well as the electricity questions as they were posted by the honorable members. Chairperson, can you allow me to start from the end with the commissioner's question the lady Mbombayi. Can I do that or should we follow the order?
No, you may deal with the questions from bottom up as well, and it's Ms. Mbombayi.
Okay. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, the young lady and Ms. Christina. For I think most of it is more of the inputs that you have to take. I think I take from there that the budget is not child-friendly in so many ways. It's not child-friendly in terms of the documents that we produce. It's not easy for the children to understand exactly what's happening with the budget. And the second one is to say, okay, when we see the children, but we see that there's been reductions in the budget, why are we having those reductions when it relates to children, children priorities or children departments that deals with children? Why are they getting the reductions? The first one of making the budget child friendly, I really appreciate and take your recommendations, which we will share with the the communications department as well as the budget office as they draft the books and any other related information that relates to the budget, whether it's at the beginning of the year in February or is it now that we are talking about the data amendment or the MTPS, that they make it child friendly, which is something that even when we are assessed internationally, we are good when it comes to the transparency, but we're not so good when it comes to public participation and making sure that we incorporate the inputs from the public as we draft our budget. So those are the comments that we're going to take forward with the minister and as well as the appropriate divisions within the National Treasury that are dealing with that. Also today we have the Commissioner for Children, but we also are most of the time dealing with the people in terms of the gender budgeting. So those are other reforms that we have to gradually add to our budget documents. So this is really appreciated. When it comes to the cards, as has been mentioned, Commissioner in Bombay, we at National Treasury, we always say that the SHE departments should be protected by the provinces, and we also try by all means from the national side to protect the SHE department, the social development, health and education, because of that element of them having to deal with the children. So you get social development deal with children in so many ways, and it also have to work with the Department of Justice for children who are against the law, and there have to be facilities for them, and there has to be budget that has been given to them, and so forth. And we also have to make sure that there's aftercare, that the children who don't have anybody to look after, that they can go to, and those are funded. And we also have to have in health, we're making sure that the mortality rates have been reduced. That is whereby, for the young lady, whereby when the woman is giving birth and there are complications and either the child or the mother dies, we're trying to make sure that we improve the health in terms of making sure that that does not happen in this day and age in South Africa, that a person can just lose their health or their life or the one of the child as they give birth. So those are the indicators that we are really trying to improve on. And on education also, it has the ill child who has just been moved to education, but I think I do take the fact that the budget is not enough, and I don't think it will never be enough. But as the resources are limited, the SHE departments are being prioritized, and the cutting of the infrastructure budget, especially as it relates to migration, you know, as it has been mentioned that the parents are going to be moving with the kids from various provinces to the Western Cape, and they will be looking for their kids to be placed at schools because that is their right to education. So then it brings the issue of overcrowding in schools, and then the quality education is you know, is hampered by that. But this in-year cards were just had to be made because I don't know how far back I can go for you, Babai, in terms of how do we get money to finance the government. So how we get the money to finance the government, we get the loans, which we borrow money internationally, and we pay the interest on that. So it's the same as when your parents are getting the bond from the bank, they have to pay interest as well as the capital on that. However, in this case, the government is really trying to finance the interest which is the cost of financing. And we also get the revenue that we get from the taxes. And we also note that VAT should not be increased. That will be shared with the minister. So that's also where we get the money. So the revenue can be raised nationally in terms of SARS is the main revenue collector for the national government. And then you also have provinces. They can also collect their provincial revenue that they can then use for provincial priorities or even add to the national priorities. So that's how the money comes. So what happens now is South Africa finds itself in a fiscal tight in terms of what we expected to get to collect from SARS is not as much as we had, you know, expected to get. And also, so that meant that we need to go borrow more. But we remember, if you borrow more and we're not doing so much, we might not be able to pay back. And then when you don't do that, if we talk the township language, the Mashonisa, the international Mashonisa are going to punish us to say, now you're not going to be able to be paying us, so we're going to increase the cost of giving you the money. So basically, the national is trying to consolidate the debt and not to borrow a lot. So if we cannot get more money coming in, it means we have to tighten our belts in terms of what we are already spending. Hence, that's where the cuts are coming in. But I'm stressing the issue of it's in year. We're only doing this for now so that we can have a sustainable fiscal environment for now, while over the MTF, in which the budget will be tabled in February, adjustments will have been made to make sure that the damage or is not as major as it can be if we don't do anything in the longer term. So those are the cuts that are being made. And as we had said already, it was tried as much as possible to make sure that we look into those conditional grants, the spending trends, and most of them, I think, especially human settlement, their spending was still very low. Hence, we see a biggest cut on it. So this was done with a lot of consideration and a lot of discussion within the national and the sectors, the social development sector, health, education, all those sectors were really involved to say, colleagues and officials, we're not getting as much as we thought we would get, and we also don't want to increase our debt burden. How can we, in the meantime, try to manage the situation? So I hope I have kind of covered the children's concern. And I think maybe if also the presentation can be shared with us, we can then engage further and even attempt to respond in writing, Chairperson, just to save time.
Thank you, Ms. Macheka. I am going to allow a bit later for them if there are follow-up questions. But please just remember that even though they've made a written submission, they've also in the meeting, as in terms of public participation, made the oral submission. So you have to read the written submission with the oral submission. But Ms. Kamish Ahmed will make a public participation matrix for us, similar to other committees in terms of Section 76 legislation for us. Thank you. You may continue.
Okay. Thank you very much. So let me just firstly answer member Bobby's question on the budget for the Western Cape. Yes, you are correct. The budget for the Western Cape is increasing from 73 to 74 billion because of that increase that has been done for the compensation of employees. So then there's also a Chairperson, there's a question from yourself about the wage bill, and there's also a question from a member, honourable member, America. So I think I will try to combine those two to come up with the response. So indeed, the increase was not what was anticipated. And I think the major challenge was that when the budget was tabled in February, the discussions were still ongoing. So the minister could not commit to say, this is where it is going to be. But going forward, it is a suggestion, a recommendation from the National Treasury that when the discussions are ongoing in terms of the wage negotiations, it should be done and completed before we complete the budget process. So when it comes to now, who is supposed to be suffering in terms of the compensation, since now the shortfall is only given for health and education. So the consideration was done, I think one can also go back to what I have just explained in terms of trying to make sure that we protect the SHE departments, because we know that they've got a very big impact on the community. So that 1.7 billion has been provided, and we note that the 1.4 billion need to be found somewhere within the budget, Chairperson. So this is the unfortunate part, but again, we are saying it's just for the temporary in year. So going forward, the discussions are ongoing to say, how can we manage the wage bill? So we are also working with the sectors to see how can we manage the wage bill and reduce the headcount where it's not necessary. So there's been a cost containment circular that has been given to departments to see if they can be able to, you know, really support why they have to increase the people or the personnel. And we're also looking into the issues of the overtime, managing overtime. So we're looking into addressing the inefficiencies within the wage bill or the compensation of employees. But at the same time, we are looking at those sectors that cannot operate without having the proper specialists, health specialists and educators. So those sectors are being protected. So for now, I don't think I will be able to really say which department should be cut. We should maybe have an engagement with the provincial treasury and also check into the spending per department in terms of which department have got high vacancy rate, but they've got funded posts, you know, then that's where then we can maybe see where the cuts are. But the engagement is ongoing between the National Treasury and the Provincial Treasury to make sure that the impact is not as bad as it can be if we do not put some measures in place. And that's where the cut in the conditional grants could be done so that it can accommodate for compensation of employees.
I hope that's sufficient, but we'll wait for the comments. I will then hand over to Godisang and Mervin to the local government. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Mary, for that. I think the main questions that were asked as points of clarity with regards to the 1.4 billion rand that has been declared as underspending. So to give a context or background, and apologies for going through the presentation very fast, that some members may have lost me. So at the beginning of the year, when we allocate money to municipalities through the local government equitable share, there are elements in the local government equitable share that are costed, and one of the big elements in that is electricity.
So in costing for how much should be given to local government, to municipalities individually, we had made provision for a 20.7% increase in NERSA tariffs, right? Because obviously NERSA determines the tariffs and we have to follow. So we had made provision for 20.7% increase, and that was given to municipalities as per Schedule 3 of the Division of Revenue Act, where you see the allocations to municipalities. That was taken into consideration. But we are aware, because of NERSA's process and our processes aren't necessarily aligned, NERSA was going through another tariff increase process from March to June, which happens almost every year, or every year, if I'm not mistaken. And we had made provision that if NERSA comes back and says to us that the tariff increase for municipalities should be above the 20.7%, then we have to make provision for that in the local government equitable share. And we had put a 1.4 billion rand figure or line in the Schedule 3 of the Division of Revenue Act that specifically says that the 1.4 billion rand is unallocated, so which means it has not been dispersed to municipalities, to make provision for if tariff increases go above 20.7%, we're able to allocate that 1.4 billion rand to municipalities. In June, we had received that the increases were now 15.1%, so which means they were much lower than the 20.7% we had originally allocated through the local government equitable share to municipalities, which means that we had over-given or we had given sufficient amount of money to municipalities, which meant that the 1.4 billion rand didn't need to be allocated to municipalities because the tariff increase was lower than what was expected. And because of that, it was declared as underspending, and it will go back to the National Revenue Fund and will be dispersed to departments and things of that nature given the budget process. So I hope that really clarifies that situation with regards to the 1.4 billion rand. Again, Honorable Mvimbi asked a question about the Neighborhood Development Partnership Grant and the 88 million that has been converted from the direct grant to the indirect component of the grant. So Western Cape is not party to that conversion. I think the municipalities where they're impacted by that conversion is Eastern Cape, Free State, Gauteng and KZN. I think Marvin will help me if I missed one or got one wrong. But from what I recall, those were the municipalities or the provinces that are affected and the municipalities within those provinces that were affected by that, which is actually very good news for the Western Cape, because it means, you know, the reasons for the conversions is that the national department will implement projects on your behalf because certain municipalities aren't able to implement those projects. So municipalities within Western Cape have shown great capacity in their planning and implementation of this. So there's no need for that conversion for municipalities. To go back to Honorable Bartman's census in 2022 and the expedition of the use of the 2022 census.
Member Mvimbi, is that a point of order? Member Mvimbi? Member Mvimbi, are you able to hear us? Okay, let me just quickly check. Mr. Molokanele, are you able to hear me? So I can just check if it's maybe on my side.
Yes, Chair, I'm able to hear you.
Okay, Member Mvimbi, are you able to hear us? Okay, Mr. Molokanele, can you please continue? Because we are going to do follow-ups once the once all of the questions are answered. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much, Chair. So with regards to the usage of the 2022 census data,
As National Treasury, as we do on a yearly basis where we conduct the budget process, we had engagements with MECs of finance for each province, HODs of finance for each province, through the Technical Committee on Finance, the Technical Budget Forum, as well as the Budget Council and Budget Forum meetings, where we took them through what was presented by the census and the implications or possible implications for municipalities, provinces, and grants that are largely driven by census data. And what was resolved at these meetings was that, firstly, the 2022 census data was released a little bit too late into the budget process, so a lot of MECs talked about it will destabilize their budget planning. The release of the census 2022 census data is being done in piecemeal. So as we have it today, we don't have the entire data that would go on to inform things in the provincial equitable share or grants that use population data. They're releasing the data as in a piecemeal manner. So we didn't want to destabilize the budget processes of provinces. And the provinces agreed to this, that we don't want to destabilize the process. So we will wait for the full data set to come in. We are in engagements and consultations with StatsSA to get that data as quickly as possible. But we will only implement it for the 20, as you stated, Chair, for the 2025 MTIF. That's where we can have the full data sets. And the necessary negotiations or the necessary consultations from provinces to municipalities and the like, and everybody that's affected by the population data will now get to see the implications of the census data. So I do feel your frustration given the cuts and the inward migration towards urbanized provinces and municipalities, but unfortunately, fortunately, we have to maintain the integrity of the budget process and the updating of the provincial equitable share and other related transfers that are dependent on population data. So we can only do this for the 2025 MTIF. So I hope I've covered all the questions that were being asked with regards to local government and the census data.
Thank you. I'm not going to answer for the respective persons who asked questions, whether their question was answered. So I'm going to ask for follow-up questions now. And then after the follow-up questions, I'm going to close the question and answer session and ask that we do any extra questions in writing, please, as we have gone into a different session of the day already. First, I'm going to start then, I know because we have the public with us, I'm going to start with Ms. Mondu and her team with follow-up questions, and then I will take follow-up questions from the members. Also, Ms. Nomdu, because you're a member of the public with your team, and we just also need indication for the procedural officer. The items that you mentioned, are those the items that you want changed in the bill, as well as do you support or not support the bill, just so that in our public participation matrix, we are able to record it as correctly. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I will allow Vimbai to pose a question quickly.
Ms. Majeke said something of children from the areas will be taken from schools in the Cape, and they have to be put in school. But my question comes, what schools are they going to be put in? Educational infrastructure grant cut for black children in school, when we're not even sure that these things are going to be safely.
Dimbai, you're breaking up a little bit. I just want to make sure I heard which schools are going to be affected by the infrastructure grant of education. I'm not sure if that was the question. Maybe I'm hearing it incorrectly.
No, that was my question.
Was that the question? Okay. Ms. Macheka, you had your hand up?
Oh, yes, Chairperson, I was going to say I can't really hear her.
Okay, that was the question. I think let us deal with the question from the member of the public first, and then I will hand over for follow-up questions from members.
I just want to I want to understand the 58 million rand in relation to the ECD grant on page 33, and then a further reference to 85 million rand to ECD grant on page 34. I'm confused. How do I explain it to people? Because I'm going to put out a statement to the media after this meeting, and I would like to be able to represent that properly. Then I just like to say to Treasury, as all of us who run budgets know, there is never enough money for everything you want. But there is a very important process that happens when you decide what is the priority and what you need. And I feel that this budget, especially with the in-year cuts to the conditional grants of the social sector, has not made the correct decisions. We are not cutting the correct places. So in answer to the chair's question, we do not like the cuts made to the social sector at all. We believe it's detrimental to the rights of children. I will rest my case there. Thank you so much for this opportunity and this platform. And I think what the chair said, historic engagement, especially definitely with a child in this forum, I would want to think. Thank you so much, everyone.
Thank you so much. Ms. Macheke?
Okay, thank you, Chairperson, and thank you from the representative from the Commission for Children. In terms of which schools are going to be cut, so the suggestion that we had made from the national government or national treasurer was to say departments should look into those the project stages. So in terms of the infrastructure, there are various stages. There's the planning, there's design, and then there's actual construction. So when the discussion was ongoing, it was really made it clear that the cuts should not be on ongoing project. So if there are projects that are already in construction, when the province cut or reduced the budget, they should not touch those which are on construction and even those which are almost nearing completion and being handed over to the Department of Education if they were done by the Department of the Infrastructure or Education itself. So in terms of now giving you the names of the schools, I'm not in that position to give you the names of the school. However, I can inquire the information from the we have the infrastructure unit within the National Treasury that deals directly with the provinces when it comes to infrastructure, and we can also get the information from the Western Cape province. But the most important thing is to minimize the disruption. So if the school was almost being completed, we really pleaded that they do not take that. They can take money from, there's money that is being budgeted for the planning or the design for those schools which have not started as yet. But it's not like we're not understanding the issue of the migration, that you're going to need more schools come the beginning of the academic year. The migration is ongoing, it's not waiting for the year to end. So we also take note of that. I'm not sure I understood what exactly is the question, Chairperson, on the ECD grant.
So Ms. Macheka, if I could just simplify it.
Yes.
How are we going to go tell the members of the public why the National Treasury is cutting the Early Childhood Development Grant? What are we going to tell people of the public?
Okay. All right. Yeah, so the same as I had explained with the infrastructure. So if... Let me share this again. The part that is being cut is on the... I just want to go back to the presentation, Chairperson. Yes, the cut that is being made for the Western Cape on the early childhood. Can you see the slide again?
I can, and just for the procedural officer, it's also on page 18 of the bill regarding the Early Childhood Development Grant. Thank you.
Yes. So again, the cut here is on the maintenance component, the maintenance of the facilities. It doesn't come in a good light, I can say, but it also goes back to the sector was consulted to say when the cuts are made, they should not affect the constructions that are there. So this is goes to the maintenance component that has been reduced. But when we look into the subsidy component, it's not being touched because we understand that again, as well as in national school nutrition, it affects the kids directly. So that is the complicated situation that the national has found itself because of the current economic situation. So it's not like it has been really targeted. It's just unfortunately being put together with the other conditional grant that has been cut.
Ms. Macheka, yes. I just want to be clear quickly because I'm also falling over some of the high English currently. I just want to check, is the answer that you're giving on the ECD grant and the school's infrastructure grant being cut because you said that it should not affect current construction when you refer to both? Are you saying that please don't build new stuff? Is that what you're saying to us? I'm falling over the English. I just need to make sure that I'm clear with what this means.
Okay, we are saying, should the money not be enough, please let's not start a new project that we can stop halfway because there's no money. Just in here. But planning for the MTF, then allocations should be made to make sure that we do build schools. We're not saying the process should just stop.
So in here, if you already started building, please continue. But if you haven't started with this current financial year's building, please don't. That's the answer then. Am I correct? Because this current financial year will not be part of next year's MTF.
Yes.
Okay. I'm clear on that. Thank you for explaining that. You may continue. Thank you.
Okay. No, thank you, Chairperson. I think you have summed up what I wanted to explain. So I don't know if there's a follow-up from the Commissioner. Thanks.
Thank you. I'm going to take all of the different follow-ups now, just so that we can deal with them all now. You may raise hands, members, or maybe the members are exhausted. I'm reading the 99 pages of the revision of revenue within minutes of it being referred to us. Member Mzimbi, your hand is up. Let me just see if there are any other hands. Okay. I only see Member Mzimbi, and you may continue with your follow-up questions, Member Mzimbi.
It's just a small one, not a follow-up really, Chairperson, maybe to
no problem.
Again, put it, put this whole issue of the local government equitable shares on the issues of electricity perspective. So that means in terms of that allocated amount, because the expected increase was going to be 20.7, that instead it was 15%. So that means there has been some saving in terms of that budget item, and therefore that is going back to the fiscus.
Thank you.
Yes, no, I'm finished, Chair.
Okay, thank you so much, Ms. Macheke.
Thank you, Chairperson. Bodisang, can you please come in?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Honorable Vimbi. So what essentially it means is that we had already given or made provision for municipalities to have a tariff increase of 20.7% within the allocations that they currently have. And then we had made further provision that if during the year NERSA would increase the tariff above what we had already given municipalities, then we'll make that 1.4 billion rand available to the municipalities. But given that NERSA came back and it was reduced to 15.1%, it was not necessary. So in essence, yes, we realized the saving of 1.4 billion rand because the money was unallocated. So it doesn't affect the municipalities. We didn't have to go to municipalities and say, give us the difference back. The municipalities still have their money, as we had put in Schedule 3 of the Division of Revenue Act, but the 1.4 billion that was unallocated reverts back to the National Revenue Fund. I hope that clears your question, Mr. Honorable
Mr. Molokanele, I'm just going to quickly, we've also been asked that in terms of the budgetary process, we try to be more child-friendly. Yeah. And while I consider myself someone who understands what you just said, I do think that maybe if a child was watching this, they wouldn't necessarily understand the answer. Mm. So if I'm reading, I'm just reading this on page 34 of the bill. And if I can just maybe quickly, and you can tell me if I'm wrong in the way that I'm simplifying it now quickly. So essentially what National Treasury said is, here is a pot of money that we are budgeting for electricity increases for municipalities that we're going to help subsidize. That's the first part, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and you worked on a specific percentage. You were working on that 20.7%, no?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Then municipalities came in and said, okay, the NERSA said, we are increasing the approved municipal tariff increases 15.1%, and that was in June 2023, right?
That's correct, except it wasn't municipalities. It was just between NERSA and Treasury. So it wasn't an application.
Between NERSA and Treasury.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's between NERSA and Treasury. So NERSA and Treasury said 15.1%. Okay. That 15.1% is obviously lower the 20.7% that you budgeted for, right?
Yes.
Okay. So then what you do is you're saying, we are taking our money back. Is that what you're doing?
No.
Because it's a saving. Because you're not going to pay that money most now over because you have a 5% that you're not going to pay.
Yeah, but I'd put it very differently. I'll try to put it differently. We wouldn't say we're taking the money back because the 20.7% that we had budgeted for, that you had said correctly, have been allocated to municipalities through the equitable share, right? So it's within municipalities. Then we had said that if NERSA comes back and says, no, actually it's above 20.7%, then we have unallocated 1.4 billion rand that we would use to give municipalities as, you know, we can call it a top up or whatever, to minimize the shock of the tariff increase. So we're not saying to municipalities, we're taking it back because it was unallocated. It wasn't with municipalities in the first place. We just realized the saving that we don't have to allocate the 1.4 billion because the 20.7% increase was enough.
So you're going to leave the 1.4 billion by the municipalities that you were originally going to give it to?
Repeat that. I'm sorry, I didn't get that.
Where is the 1.4 billion going?
It was
is it staying? Is it staying by the municipalities, or is it going to national treasury?
It's not staying with the it was unallocated. So no municipality received an increase. It was unallocated in case the tariff increase became more than we had expected.
Okay.
Yeah,
Where is it going? Is it staying there unallocated?
No, it's going back to the National Revenue Fund. It's been declared as underspending because it hasn't been allocated.
So you are taking your money back because the National Revenue Fund is at National Treasury?
Yes, but technically speaking, if we don't use it for the required means, then we have to, just like every year, conditional grants, if they don't spend, we have to take it back.
Yes, that's fancy English for we're taking our money back. Okay, now I just wanted to make sure I understand. Cool. Member Mvimbi, is that clear, or is there anything follow-up that you want to make on that? Okay.
You have, both you, Chairperson, and Mr. Maluleka, you are very helpful. Thank you very much.
I just wanted to make sure, because I'm also falling over my fancy English today, Member Mvimbi, so I just wanted to make sure. National Treasury is taking their money back. Okay, cool.
I would say savings as well.
If you would like to call it savings, you're welcome to call it savings. But if I'm a child in the Western Cape and I see what's happening, I would understand that National Treasury is taking their money back. Okay. Colleagues, are there any other follow-up questions? Otherwise, can we please deal with administration for tomorrow then? Member Klaas, sorry, I didn't see your hand. You may go ahead.
No, my question is that when they take it, the money back, né, what will happen? It will increase their expenditure. Make an example, if they spend all the money or they spend certain money, so that money goes to add to the money that is they have. That is my question.
Okay, I'm not sure if I understand the question correctly, but maybe Mr. Molokanele does, and then I don't need to understand.
The money goes back to fiscus.
Yes, the money goes back. So any other department that has declared a saving? Sorry, Chairperson. I'm sorry.
No. Please continue.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, the money is going back to the fiscus. So every other national department that has declared a saving, it will be in one pot. So it goes back to the fiscus.
Okay, thank you so much. Colleagues, with that, I'm going to conclude the question and answer session. I just want to make sure that before I excuse the members of the public as well as the Treasury officials, that I'm getting the input from the public correct. Ms. Nomdu and Ms. Mbai, in terms of the notes that I've made, you mentioned that infrastructure grants must not be cut. You mentioned, Mbai, that please don't increase VAT. You've asked that the health, education, social sector grants please not be cut, particularly in year amendments to the conditional grants. You spoke about human rights experts, whether they are advising on these things, such as the budgets on these conditional grants. You asked for more friendly budget document and budget system and child-friendly tools, such as Instagram Reels and TikToks. You asked about the rationality regarding the ECD cuts. And then Vimbai also asked, how is it possible for National Treasury to abandon children's rights? I'm hoping that I'm quoting and summarizing you correctly for when the public participation matrix is put together. If I've missed anything, please do tell me now, because I would not wish for us to miss the recommendations for the bill that you've made.
Thank you, Chair Vumbai. Is that an accurate summary of our presentation?
That's such accurate summary. I'm loving the TikTok part.
Thank you very much, Chair, and the members. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, and please know that you are always welcome at our budget committee meetings. With that, I'm going to thank National Treasury officials for being with us today. I think it's been a very difficult presentation given the current fiscal environment, but I also would like to thank you for understanding that when we ask these questions, we do it in terms of our mandate as legislators. regarding oversight, public participation and lawmaking and the impact on our constituents. I appreciate that part. And I just want to thank everyone for their patience, for making sure that we are procedurally always compliant. I hope that people know that this, we do not wish to do the wrong thing. So we always try to make sure that our T's are crossed and our I's are dotted in this regard. Should there be any other written questions and or recommendations from the committee, we will be sending that through to National Treasury. But with that, you are excused. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, Honourable Members and the members of the public. Thank you so much for listening to us and giving us an opportunity to present this amendment bill to yourself. Thank you and goodbye.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay. Colleagues, as usual, we have separated the briefing slash public hearing from the negotiating mandate because in the past, it used to all be one meeting, but I think 1 or 2 years ago, we started separating it in order to give members an opportunity to go through the respective bill after referral, briefing, and so on, public participation, and in order to go put the inputs, recommendations, questions, etc., together for the next briefing date. Our next briefing date will be the our duty or requirement upon us will be to put our negotiating mandate together. And that will be for the meeting at 9 o'clock tomorrow. I just want to check, Ms. Kamish Ahmed, I'm correct. It is tomorrow. That will be followed by the mayor briefing.
Correct, Chairperson.
Okay. So now, members, my advice would then be that if we're starting at 9 o'clock, that members should send in their comments then by 7, and that Ms. Kamish Ahmed can perhaps send the matrix or the comments or input out then by 8 o'clock. I just want to check if everyone would be happy with that. This is anticipation for the 9 o'clock
no
meeting.
No problem.
Fine with me. Yes, thank you.
Perfect. So Ms. Kamish Ahmed, everyone is sending in their input slash recommendations, etc. by 7 o'clock tomorrow morning on the 24th. And we will then send out to all the members our respective matrix at 8 o'clock or whatever that needs to be sent to everyone, the inputs, recommendations, if any. And then the meeting starts at 9. Ms. Kamish Ahmed, administratively, are you happy with that?
Yes, Chairperson.
Okay. I'm hoping there was no other committee business that we need to deal with today in terms of administration. But if there were, can we please postpone it to tomorrow, given that we've already gone 1 hour and 8 minutes over time?
No problem, Chairperson. I support it. Very progressive.
Thank you so much. And colleagues, thank you so much for being online longer than anticipated, as well as your contribution and your support today. The meeting is herewith adjourned.